I'm Nolan Ford, and today I'm joined in the studio by two musicians representing separate musical projects based out of Portland, Oregon. Mark Robertson and Chris Miller on tour supporting each other's projects, Harlow and Green Hills Alone, respectively. Mark is known by many in the Chico music scene for the work he's done accompanying local songwriter Pat Hull, and Chris Miller is familiar to many in the Reading arts community. Both musicians are members of Sleepy Volcano, a Portland-based creative collective that traditionally favors experimentation and unlikely orchestration. Mark and Chris, thanks for coming down today.
Thanks for having us.
So tell me about the Sleepy Volcano Creative Collective and how that came to be.
You want to take it, Mark?
Yeah. So Sleepy Volcano started off, and still is very humble. It's really just a group of us who work out of the same studio in North Portland. We all met kind of through various musical endeavors, and it just happens to be the place and the same group of people that we've worked on all of these recordings with. I think there's been about four releases so far, mm-hmm. That have just turned into kind of a more collective, collaborative approach. And it's based with engineer Matthew Morgan, who is the main engineer who's recording all the records and producing most of them. And then our friend Catherine Odell, who is a visual artist and illustrator. And then our friend Mike Beaton, who's a composer, and he's been in there as well, all kind of working together.
Yeah.
Nice.
It's one of those situations where we feel stronger together than we do independently, so it's a nice group of people to trust and allow them to fill in where you can't do it alone.
Now, on your website, Mark, I've seen you've divided your creative endeavors into two sections, songs and sounds, and I was wondering if you could elaborate on why you decided to separate these into different categories.
Of course, yeah. I think it's really just tied to where my creative energy has been going lately. I've always been kind of obsessed with instrumental music and creating things more in that fashion, but lately I've just decided to try to share them and with a new kind of series of pieces that's designed to be around binaural audio and the technique of recording sound in a more what they call a 3D fashion. So I've been trying to do them as more live recordings, maintaining like a very human element in the music and kind of based around a space like the first one we recorded in the old church in downtown Portland, which is a big old cathedral. And it was kind of just an improvisation for three electric pianos playing all together in this really reverberant space. And then we released it with a print that was accompanied by, that was created by our friend Catherine Odell, who we mentioned earlier. So we're just trying to find these new avenues to share the music with people as well.
So explain binaural audio and how do you achieve a 3D image for sound and music?
So binaural audio has actually been around for quite a while. I think it had a little bit of popularity maybe 20 or 30 years ago. But since then, it's essentially it's a wooden head that is shaped. It's made to just mimic the density of an actual human head. And there's microphones in the places of the two ears. And you place this just in the middle of a space. And due to the shape of the head and the cancellations, and everything about the room, it makes it to be exactly how the human ears would actually hear the sound coming in. So it's a very accurate representation of a 3D space. So instead of approaching these recordings as like more of a studio effort where everything is individually mic'd or, any kind of trickery too, we just put this one thing in the room and try to make the actual sounds happen all around it with just one stereo track. And see what we can get away with in terms of the space.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's definitely very distinctively different if you listen to the songs and the sounds pages within your website. And I was wondering if you can elaborate a little bit on how the creative processes differ from both of the achieving both of those sounds.
I find that it's really quite different the two, and it is really refreshing for me to go back and forth between the two because it's a different, completely different mental space to be working on songs and or performing songs or playing songs and sharing them in that way, or to be thinking in terms of these more instrumental pieces. I find it's two completely different sides of the brain, and I enjoy the back and forth, but I found that I really like doing both. I didn't really want to choose one, so I think that was mm-hmm. due to the division there. But.
Nice. Well, I'm going to throw it over to Chris for a second here. I love your new album. It's awesome.
Thank you.
And I also understand it explores some very deeply personal experiences that were difficult at first for you to share with others. And I was hoping you could tell me a little bit about the story of how this album came to be and a little bit about your trip with Mark to Iceland that helped kind of unleash some of this music.
So, you know, the main catalyst for all these songs was the death of my dad in 2009, and whose birthday was yesterday, which was kind of nice. We played in Reading, so it was kind of a momentous occasion. But, yeah, they were songs that were kind of sourced from pain, and they were difficult to bring into a public space. And so Mark and I went to Iceland 2 years ago, or 2.5 years ago.
Yeah.
And I had such a new relationship with art and music in that experience where I felt compelled to share it, even though it was uncomfortable and kind of I knew it was kind of hard. And so, like Mark was talking about the collection of people we work with Sleepy Volcano, it took kind of like learning how to trust friends and other musicians to kind of fill in the pieces. And they showed me aspects of myself and the music that I didn't know existed, which is quite a gift. Yeah, and I'm really excited how it turned out. It was really an exploration in the unknown, because I wrote all the songs on acoustic guitar, and it was really hard for me to break out of the muscle memory body experience of just kind of keeling over in my bedroom playing these acoustic guitars, you know, by myself. Mm-hmm. And to bring them out and make them something new was a lot of fun for me.
Was there anything about just Iceland in general that was a special experience?
Yeah, Iceland renewed my faith in art and music. You know, there's going into that, or before that trip, I didn't know what it was any of us are doing as artists. You know, it just seemed kind of like a vanity game, and it was confusing, and I didn't know how to participate. And Iceland kind of taught me that, you know, they have a saying in Iceland that everyone has a novel in their belly, you know, the kind of that everyone has something to say, and it's kind of your duty as a human and as an artist to share it. So it felt more holistic and healthy to come back, you know, and be on much firmer ground when I was, you know, working on this stuff. Yeah.
Mark, do you want to add anything about your experience with travels in Iceland and how that's kind of shaped you musically in any way?
It was very refreshing just to, if anything else, just to take a break. We were there for kind of an extended period of time and got to refocus on a lot of things like Chris was talking about. And just having the time, like you said, to think about the reasons for doing things alongside writing and all of the more obvious things that were beneficial, I think was... The side of that is even more beneficial, of just the time that we had there. And we played a few shows and, you know, engaged in music as well, but I feel like it was more the rounded experience of taking a step back after some difficult times that was the most refreshing and kind of got us back to a position of feeling inspired again.
So. Yeah.
Both of your projects, if you listen to them, the recordings anyways, often have like many different instruments happening at once, and I'm wondering if it's been a challenge to pull off the music that you create as a two-man show, and how do you navigate creating, you know, such a lush sound with only two people?
It has been a challenge. Actually, this tour, that's been pretty new. Even last year when we've gone out to support these recordings, we did bring quite a few more people with and kind of had to be a more full band experience, but we wanted a way for it to be intimate still, with maintaining that kind of lush environment, because it's so much a part of what we like. But I feel like so far on this trip, we've been testing it out, and I feel like we've been enjoying it so far. To be able to do the same thing in a house that you would in a large club, or, you know.
We're learning something. I'm learning something every night. You know, some things work and some things don't work, and it's, you know, it helps a lot. People listening and having their, you know, reaction and their energy is kind of essential to growth.
What amount of any given show would you say is improvisation, and how much of it is just, you know, very much like stick to how you play it every time?
I don't know, 80%, at least from my end, it feels like pretty consistent all the time. And then there's some stuff that I can't seem to pull it from the unknown and make it concrete, you know. Part of me kind of likes that fear element of not knowing what's going to happen, and kind of creating that space for that to happen. Because I know in recordings, that's kind of the magic you're looking for. You're looking for that moment where you're not really playing from your head or rote memory. You're, you know, you've kind of lost yourself in a moment. So I think leaving things open a little bit, at least, kind of creates the opportunity for that to happen. And sometimes it's humbling. You know, sometimes it doesn't work out as great as you want. But, you know, those other times, I think it's the best thing. So,
well, you're both fans of instrumental and experimental music. You might need to help me with the pronunciation here. But, Chris, you cite Jeremy Enoch.
Yeah.
His Return of the Frog Queen as a big influence for your album. And what I'm curious about is what filters do you run through in your mind when you're listening to this type of music to determine, like, this is really good or this is bad?
Yeah.
And then what elements of that, of those styles, how do you choose what to take from listening and put it into your own music?
Well, the Jeremy Enoch was kind of a bonding between Matt Morgan and I. You know, we're both the same age, we're in our mid-30s, and it was kind of like he was an inspiration to us in our youth, you know, and it was something where we could see eye to eye and kind of have a foundational aspect sonically about what we were doing. As far as kind of picking and choosing the different path that we went, we really tried to take that out of it. You know, the goal in making the Green Hills Alone record was to try to get people's unfiltered creative, you know, expression. So, you know, there was the critical element of fear always enters in art, and so, you know, it was just trying to stay relaxed and calm and peaceful and trusting ourselves to just give who we were, you know, and not just me but everybody involved. And then I think we did it very quickly. You know, we did most of the tracking in about a week, and then we didn't do much beyond those first mixes. Once they kind of took shape and there was enthusiasm behind where the different songs were going, at that point it was kind of like, you know, the fear or the hesitation was gone. It was just kind of fun. We're celebrating.
Nice. Yeah. Mark, do you want to add anything as far as the process you go through when you're kind of drawing from other artists and how what elements you like to keep of their music and try to put into your own?
I don't think it's so much a conscious decision for me most of the time, it feels, at least. I think some of the most powerful things in music are the things that don't have a chance to go through your rational mind yet and go directly to you. So I guess it's kind of just following that element of it. I wouldn't say it's necessarily always planned, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Well, I wanted to talk to you too, Mark, about your album, The Swell, and if there are any recurring themes or what inspired that album.
That album was actually a very collective process. It started writing the songs for that when I was quite young, I think about 19 or so. And then with a group of folks, Bob Reynolds and Andrew Campbell, Chris and Cody Cadill, our friend, and we had several different folks who would come play with us from time to time, but it was really just kind of inspired by that group of people at that time. And it was very much a snapshot of that. And I really like that.
Nice. Yeah. Are you playing any songs from that album on this tour?
Haven't been so far, actually. I've been trying to kind of do some new things and explore more of the fresh unknown on this one.
Is most of this the material you're playing on this tour kind of previewing a new release that's coming soon?
It is, yeah. I actually I've recorded a lot of these new songs, about 7 or 8 of them, while I was house sitting for my friend Matthew Morgan, who has a studio there. He has an 8-track Atari tape machine, and I was just been tracking on it by myself while I was hanging out with his dog when he's out of town. So I've got quite
Luna.
A few of them
She's a good dog.
Captured that way. But I'm still, at this point, I always favor the collaborative approach over the mono vision of a record. So that's the part that I still look forward to, is taking those things off the reel and actually seeing if other people want to take them someplace new with me. So that's yet to come.
Cool. Well, in addition to your work creating your own music, you've often supported or produced music for other artists. And I'm wondering, how does the work that you do assisting other people's songwriting influence your own? And then does it ever become challenging to manage like those two sides of your musical life?
I think it's always kind of been inspiring, because that's kind of how I always started out in music, was through supporting other people, and I always found it really inspiring. I feel like I've learned the most about music that way, just from being an instrumentalist and or accompanying other people. And once again, it's like just having different things to work on that put you in different mental space, I always find really, really refreshing. So I always kind of like juggling that a little bit and find it more inspiring. And I don't think I ever really find it stressful, but yeah. Maybe that's because I never got too carried away with it or something. but it's always been really great, and I really appreciate all of those opportunities a lot of the time. And a lot of that comes through the folks we have at Sleepy Volcano, where we just feel like there's always something going on, whether it's, you know, tracking a classical orchestration of our friend Mike or working on a record of, you know, space rock songs with our friend Rebecca. Either way, it's just as fun, and it keeps it really fresh for us.
Yeah, it's kind of like we all know what it's like to be inspired and, you know, just like driven by an idea. And we also know what it feels like to be completely burned out and feel like you don't want to ever play music again. And so I think we all kind of take turns getting in front and letting the other people benefit from one person's enthusiasm. And so I think it's healthy that way because we discovered how to burn ourselves out as individuals. And mm-hmm. so right now we're trying to figure out a way to create music in a healthy way that is, you know, continues to be surprise us. And
nice. It seems like a very healthy cycle there.
That's the plan.
Yeah. So far, I like it. Yeah. I like it a lot. So by now, both of you have been living in Portland for many years. And I was hoping you could share some of your experiences as far as what it was like first becoming musicians in that area, or not first becoming, but, you know, mm-hmm. first being introduced to that area as musicians, and how it's changed over the years being an artist in such a creative city.
I think the change is something that has been on everybody's mind up there, even to the point where we walked in a music store to buy a cable the day before around the corner from my house, and even the fellow on the radio was talking about, this is just something we need to accept. Everything around us is changing. You know, like, I feel like it's something you encounter everywhere, and everybody's kind of just trying to find their own way to cope with it. We're trying to keep a really positive perspective on things and realize that nothing is ever the same forever.
Yeah. But I feel Portland could be one of two things depending on your perspective. It could be a place you go and you realize you have no talent at all because there are a million people doing the same thing as you and doing it very well. Or you could, you know, work your way to the better perspective where there's, you know, there's people inspiring you all the time. There's people that are, you know, breaking through their own thresholds of fear and creating, you know, their own special art. And making that transition is something I had to do. You know, I carried with me, you know, an identity as a musician, you know, as an ego as a musician. So part of my journey is to try to shed that and to try to be joyful in it and not be competitive. And I feel like I'm very close to that. I feel like I'm there, but we'll see.
Nice. Okay, well, let's talk a little bit about the songs that you're going to be playing in the studio today. Let's start with Mark. What song are you choosing to play with us today, and what can you tell us about it?
It's a song called Red Sun, and that is one of the ones, one of the first ones that I tracked on the tape machine there. Not entirely by myself, this one. We had a friend of ours named Arturo Martinini, who's played some keyboards and theremin and other things on it. But it was just one of the first experiments of you know, being alone in these series of weeks of house-sitting at the studio, and kind of just writing to more rhythmic elements was a big part of it, too. Like having a fixed drum machine and trying to think about more, you know, injecting that kind of feeling into it. Which is something I hadn't done much of on the Swell, and I've kind of been fascinated with more recently, and it proved to be really fun, actually. And just kind of the recklessness of recording to tape and using a lot of analog gear that sometimes works and sometimes doesn't was really fun, too.
Nice. And then, Chris, how about the song you're playing for us today?
The song I played is Wolves, and it's the last song on the album that, you know, I released last year. And It's interesting because that was the last song that we recorded in the process, and we did a bunch of stuff, tracked everything. We had this one song left, you know, we kind of had like a whiteboard of all the stuff, and that one wasn't crossed off. And we had a big ice storm in Portland in February 2013, I think.
14.
Yeah. And it was kind of cool. The city froze, the streets froze, and everything got quiet, and everyone was basically trapped wherever they were. And luckily, we were trapped in the studio, so it was kind of a dream come true. And it was this very magical environment. We went to a bar, and we had they fed me a few tequilas and got me liquored up, and then we went to the studio, and then we just kind of had this, sat down and, you know, tracked this single take final thing, and it was, that's the kind of magic moment that you maybe spend 4 months trying to figure out how do you create this one moment. I was taking Tai Chi going up to the album just so I wouldn't be a nutcase, because I can be. But yeah, that I feel like that song is. I mean, it's the conclusion of everything for me, of, you know, whatever I want to say musically at this point in my life. So.